Hello, this is Bruce Johansson, again your host for Good Word. I'm a professor of biblical studies at the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. We will be discussing again another agent of hope, one that probably is the best known in the New Testament, and that is Peter. To assist me in our discussion of this fascinating person, I'm again pleased to welcome my colleagues, Dr. Carl Kosart and Dr. Paul Dibdahl. Gentlemen, welcome to Good Word.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter, probably one of the most colorful and, could one say, the most comforting characters among Jesus' disciples. If David catches that role in the Old Testament, perhaps Peter does in the New. He's an interesting guy. He's called the son of John in John's Gospel. Peter figures at the very beginning of John's Gospel as he's brought to Jesus by Andrew, who hears John the Baptist preaching. And I at first was very surprised that he was called the son of John. I hadn't picked up on that in all my reading. I just hadn't focused on it, because in another place he's called the son of Jonah. And that is in Matthew 16. Jesus addresses Peter, son of Jonah. And one of the texts suggests that title actually is Peter, the son of an extremist. And they have speculation whether they got him mixed up with Simon the Zealot. I don't think so.
Well, you do see a little bit of a fluctuation in Peter's character. He is extreme. I mean, he's almost all or nothing. You see him back and forth.
I'm wondering if more of the disciples were really had maybe at least sympathetic ties with Zealots.
Yeah.
One of them was a Zealot.
Yes.
We know that.
Yes.
But that was a new insight.
Maybe we
me.
Should explain what we mean by that Zealot or Zealot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A group of people that were even violently opposed to the Roman occupation. Didn't want to pay taxes to Rome, opposed the use of the Greek language even within their country.
Mm-hmm.
These were...
The Romans called them sicari, daggermen.
Yes, daggermen. Uh-huh.
Kind of modern-day guerrilla
assassins
fighters.
Or guerrilla fighters. So the fact that you have, as a part of Jesus' group of 12, you have tax collectors or former tax collectors, and this class of people would have made for some interesting conversations as they walked along.
It would have been.
So.
It's interesting that there are actually four names used for him. You have Simeon, which is used only one time,
mm-hmm.
and I believe it is Paul or somebody who refers. Yeah, it's Paul who refers to him as that. And then Simon is referred, and that is the Greek form. Simeon is the Hebrew form. But then you have Kepha or Cephas, mm-hmm. which is the Aramaic name that Jesus gives to him in John. He says, "You are Simon, and you will be called Kepha, Cephas," which means rocky.
Mm.
We're going to talk more about that next week. What were the initial circumstances of Peter's call to discipleship? Did it start in Judea? Did it start on the shores of Galilee?
That's an interesting question because, you know, he's from Galilee. He's a fisherman.
Yeah.
He's up in Galilee. And yet in the beginning of the Gospel of John, which takes place in Judea, Andrew, his brother, goes and grabs him, which it doesn't seem like that's going to be a 60-mile trek back up to Galilee. Maybe it was, but it just seems kind of maybe that Peter was there, and perhaps that suggests that, I mean, Peter's job as a fisherman, I think, would be, seasonal.
Yeah.
And so perhaps, you know, he was maybe a follower of John the Baptist as well.
Yeah. I mean, John attracted people all the way from Syria, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And
so we could say he's a seeker.
Yeah.
He was interested in spiritual things. This is not simply a businessman in the business of catching fish, but he has a hunger spiritually.
Yeah.
This might help us, too. I know it's been puzzling and really difficult to understand how it seems as if, at least in some cases where you read about Jesus' call of his disciples, it's as if, why is it that they would drop everything and just follow someone who has just called to them? But there these indications that there was probably some interaction prior to that, they would have had some kind of knowledge, some familiarity with John the Baptist. And
heard,
it's not
heard Jesus speak before.
Or Jesus, yeah. even. Yeah. And it's not to to lessen, you know, their courageous stepping out to follow Jesus, but there may have been some prior contact to that call.
Yeah. Whether it was immediately and they didn't know Jesus, that would emphasize this, some kind of majestic supernatural power on Jesus' part. But however you look at it, to just drop their nets and go was an
still
amazing,
a tremendous commitment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what evidence do we have of Peter's role as a leader among the disciples?
It's interesting. If you look at the list of disciples, Peter's name comes first. So he's kind of given pride of position. And I was thinking, especially in regard to last week's lesson, we were talking about the age of John. It's interesting in one of the descriptions of the empty tomb account that is Peter and John who race off. Peter kind of is a little slower. John puts on the passing gear and passes him, but he gets to the tomb and he doesn't go in. He waits until Peter comes, and Peter goes in first. So there seems to be a special place that that Peter held among those disciples.
It also speaks for our last week's discussion where we thought John was a fairly young man, maybe the youngest disciple.
Yes.
He could run faster.
Yes.
How did Peter's initial understanding, or should I say misunderstanding, of Jesus as Messiah contribute to his pretty long and erratic journey to a mature faith? There are so many ups and downs. His leadership, I think, also comes from his being, I guess one could say that he was very fast in response. He was kind of a spokesperson.
And I think that might be part of it, is that his failures and his successes are more visible than those of some of the other disciples. The others had doubts. I'm sure they had you know, good things and bad things, but we just don't hear about them. They weren't in quite the central position that Peter was. Yeah. So he gets credit and he gets a blame because he was kind of the one who was
putting himself
out there.
He'll take the risk.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I guess somebody once said, Peter gave them comfort because he always he thought with his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things is interesting in the you have an issue of temple tax when the religious leaders come and ask him if his master pays the temple tax, and it's curious that Peter he thinks so, yes, you know, and then he goes back to Jesus and he finds out that he doesn't.
Yes.
Well, I love the story on the Mount of Transfiguration when Moses and Elijah appear in glorious splendor and talk with Jesus. And just the description in Luke, Peter and his companions were very sleepy, but when they became fully awake, they saw his glory, the two men standing with them. And then Peter's the first one to speak up. Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And then there's this sort of parenthetical statement in Luke. He did not know what he was saying. So he's just awakened, and his first impulse is to speak. But, he didn't really know what he was saying.
Mm.
Bless his heart.
Yes. And then we get down to the time where Jesus is confronting in the most serious way the religious leaders and aristocracy. Yeah. And there's this discussion Jesus tells his disciples. I think that's the thing that Peter and the disciples never really, really got. I'm going to die. They heard the die. They heard the persecution. They heard the rejection. Jesus always add, but rise on the third day. But they probably thought, just like any good Jew, he will participate in the resurrection.
Yeah.
And they were not aware of the significance of that resurrection. They just don't want to hear about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jesus says, well, you're all going to desert me.
Mm.
And Peter's response was,
not me. Yeah.
Well, of course, not me. I mean, even if everyone else does.
Yeah,
everybody
I'll else be does. Faithful and true. And bless his heart, he was in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Yeah.
A little too quick with that sword.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was a man who was quick for action, but almost, again, it goes back to that theme. He didn't often think, before he said it. And that got him in trouble. I mean, Jesus himself said, to Peter, "And you get behind me, Satan." And that's a pretty tough lump to take.
Yes. And then the sequel to that story. You have Peter, of course, denying his Lord three times.
Mm, yes.
And it says that he went out and wept bitterly. Somehow I see parallels with David again. David messes up, but then he comes back and he weeps also bitterly. He also repents. And you see Peter, he's suddenly ready. Oh, yes, mm-hmm. I said that. And mm-hmm. now I've denied him three times.
Mm-hmm.
And he weeps bitterly.
Mm-hmm.
What is the sequel to that story?
The sequel is so powerful at the end of John, especially in the original language, when they're there and around the campfire and eating some fish. And of course, Jesus says to Simon, "Simon, do you love me more than these?" And that had been Simon's boast, right? That, he yeah. loved him more.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, though, but in the Greek, when he says, "Simon, do you love me more than these?" the word he actually uses is the word agapao,
mm-hmm.
which is the ultimate, most purest form of love and what Peter thought he had. And then, of course, Peter says, "Well, Lord, he's not willing to boast." And then Jesus asks him again the same question, "Do you agapao me?"
Two times, yeah.
And he says, "Lord, you know." And then finally Jesus says, "Simon Peter, do you phileo me? Do you even love me with that, brotherly love?"
Yeah.
And then once again, Peter doesn't boast. He says, "Lord, you know all things." And so you see this transformation that someone who had been there to say, "I'm the best, I'm the greatest, I'm number one,"
yeah.
Becomes a man humbled, a man transformed.
Mm-hmm. Then there's those questions that Jesus... I've often wondered whether this conversation took place off to the side mm-hmm. or in the hearing of the other disciples. I'd like to think it was in the hearing.
Yeah, it's kind of a reinstatement, in a sense, of Peter in the presence of others.
Because what does Jesus say to him?
Yes.
Afterwards?
"Feed my sheep."
"Feed my sheep. Feed my lambs."
Well, it is in the end of the Gospel of John, and it's not in the end of Mark. I mean, Mark, of course, we think was, the scribe, perhaps, of Peter.
Yeah.
So John tells the story.
And then, curiously, Peter wants to hear about the other disciple. What's going to happen to him? And then Jesus says, "Well, it's not for you."
Well, there is clearly not enough just in one of these sessions to talk about Peter.
Yeah.
What would you pick out in the last few seconds here as the most comforting thing about Peter as an agent of hope?
That he keeps coming back.
Mm.
Yes.
He fails spectacularly, but then he comes back again.
Yeah. And he's accepted.
And then that he's accepted again.
Yeah. And he's willing then to work.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Gentlemen, thank you for your contribution to our discussion. We're going to speak of Peter again next week. And so I'm so appreciative of your contribution this week. Also, a warm thanks to John Campbell, our program engineer. For Good Word, this is your host, Bruce Johansson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.